Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation, and I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by the person who won the opportunity to select a sermon topic at our most recent service auction, Colleen Norris. Our music director, Hal Walker. We have the musical contributions of the very talented Reed Parsons today. They have rearranged the placement of a couple of their pieces, you'll notice in the service. You're in for a wonderful musical experience this morning. It is good to be together. Joy is everywhere. It's in the earth's green covering of grass, in the blue serenity of sky, in the reckless exuberance of spring, in the severe abstinence of gray winter, in the living flesh that animates our bodily frame, in the perfect poise of the human figure, noble and upright, in living, in the exercise of all our powers, in the acquisition of knowledge, in the fighting of evils, in dying for gains we can never share, joy is there everywhere. And so we light our chalice this morning in celebration of the ubiquity of joy. So let there be joy in our coming together this morning. Let there be truth heard in the words spoken and the songs we sing. Let there be help and healing for our disharmony and despair. Let there be silence for the voice within us and the voice beyond us. Let there be joy in our coming together. Come, let us worship. From one of the recent Unitarian Universalist Association meditation manuals called Falling into the Sky, a poem by a member of the UU congregation at Rock Tavern, New York, Terry Pahuki, Joy. I have been wondering what the morning glories know. Is it envy that compels these vines to strangle other flowers arising in their path? Or perhaps self-preservation, to climb these walls, forsaking humbler beings, winding greedy stems around the trellis in their hungry pursuit of light. Still, every morning, basking in their spiral shadows, I want to believe it is something more, this fevered yearning to be open purple flowers, yield both bold-throated glorias to the sun, and in the blaze of afternoon, curl petals softly into shyness. And every morning, I plead with the dew-moist buds to know their secret joy, to open and close without holding, to surrender all to light, to sing, "I am completely yours," over and over again. Gracious Spirit of life and of love, teach us through your creation to sing songs of praise as loudly as the blue jays in the top of the oak trees, to open to life as joyfully as the morning glories in full sun, to witness to beauty as elegantly as the tall sunflowers shining over the fields. All around us in your creation, testimonies to joy, simple, everyday, ordinary joy. So let us notice and learn the ways of the plants and the animals and the creatures, and contribute our voices, our lives, to the sounds of praise. Amen.
Good morning. Oh, God, it's hot. Well, now you know what I feel like in tripling it. But anyway, Melissa asked me to talk to you guys a little bit about what brings me joy. Well, there's a lot of stuff that brings me joy. You know, one thing is probably camping with some good friends. Another thing is that some people say my life has been a little strange and I do some strange things. Some of you know my past, some of you know my passions, and some of you know I'm an avid Ohio Bigfoot researcher. I belong to a group that's based right here in Kent. My group and I, we go places like Salt Fork and West Branch and other places, and we're on the hunt for it. We're going to come up with an answer sooner or later. I get sore, my legs hurt, my hips hurt. Last night we did 6 miles at West Branch in this rotten heat and humidity. Didn't find anything. I do sometimes bring home ticks, just ask my wife. But my real passion is racing. Always has been. It doesn't matter what kind of racing. I had a love of racing way back when I was a little kid, back when my parents took me there and I was what you called a pit rat. I grew up at Barberton Speedway. I got in my teens. I worked odd jobs to buy and then build my very first race car back in 1981. I didn't even have my driver's license yet, and I was in high school. That set the hook. But then after that, I joined the Army in 1982, and then I got into hot rods when I was in there. I drove trucks for Uncle Sam. Came home in 1990, bored. Couldn't find work. I needed a race car. Bad. So I built another one. Back then, in those days, they were a lot cheaper, and we built one about every year because that was all they were good for. I had some good years, and I had some bad ones. That was one of my biggest wins. I did that for a few years, and then I decided, all right, it's time to try something new. Let's try drag racing, you know. And so mostly I lost a lot of money. But I got into drag racing with a very fast, what they call vintage front-engine dragster. I ran it for about 3 years. We ran at speeds of about 10 seconds, 147 mph and a quarter mile. And that was moving. That was probably the best ride of my life, to be honest with you. But then family happened. And, yeah, that's me burning up. Happy. Family happened. That's my daughter, Caitlin, long time ago. So I took some time off. I had to retire from a good truck driving career not too long ago due to some other issues that I had. And I've been bored ever since. Well, not ever since, but I was bored. I told Sandy, I said, I got to do something. I'm going crazy. Then I heard that my hometown track of Barberton Speedway was opening back up just last year, because it's been closed for a few years. And I said to myself, all right, this is it. But I'm not happy just watching. It's fun, but I got too many laps on that track. I probably got thousands of laps on that track since 1981. So I begged my wife. I was 51 years old. I said, please, let me get back up on that steering wheel. And she said, okay. And I'm like, really? She says, just promise me you'll be safe. I'm like, I'll be safe. I promise. So right after Summer Institute of 2015, I went looking for another car. I had that car built and ready to go for a three-day cavalcade event last September. I only had like 2.5 months to get it done. I welded my last roll cage bar the night before. It happened because I wanted it to happen. And just like many years ago, people tell me that I can't do it or I couldn't do it. Don't ever tell me that. I had a good season this summer. I was tied for fourth in points chase. I got into an accident just there earlier this month, which bent the car pretty bad and gave it a good twist, caused me to have some vision loss in my right eye. But rest assured, there's a new car in the driveway right now getting built. Hopefully it's going to be faster, lighter, stronger. So come out and watch sometime next year. Come join my fan club. You know, I'm old, but I'm not finished. I got a long way to go. Racing just harkens back to my favorite times in the past. It's like what I like doing best. All right, it just lifts me up when all I hear and see that brings me down. And that's it. You know, I find joy in the fact that I do it myself. So thank you.
What brings you joy? Would you take a moment to think about it? What lifts you up when you're feeling down? What brings you joy in trying times? And then go ahead and call out some of your responses. What brings you joy?
Music.
Art. Community. Singing and community. Dancing.
Language.
Family.
Gardens.
Beach. Hiking.
Students.
Grandchildren. abundant sources of joy. Pat's I just heard too, and many more that I couldn't hear. I facilitated a chalice group this week on this theme of joy, and one of the participants in the group made a list of the sources of joy available in his life. His list of sources includes family, nature, learning, the arts, and community. I think it's a really good list, and I think we could add to it with some of the suggestions that you offered this morning. If I were to add something, I think I'd add divinity, larger than all of us and yet encompassing us all. You can name it however you wish. I want to add it to the list, and yet, as I think about it, I also realize that divinity is often found in the sources on that list. So I'm not sure if divinity is another source or if it's a dimension of those sources. I've been puzzling over it, but I am sure of this. Puzzling over the sources of joy, finding them so that we can embrace them, is a worthwhile endeavor. Did you know that joy is a very important theme in the Bible? The word joy appears 88 times in the Hebrew scriptures and 57 times in the Christian scriptures. Judaism and Christianity both have rich and deep teachings about the source of joy and many psalms and hymns of praise. The hymn we sang at the beginning of the service is a 20th century example, "Joyful, joyful, we adore thee." And I could talk with you today about the rich Jewish and Christian teachings on joy, but instead I'd like to speak with you about my very own particular Unitarian Universalist insights, which have recently been clarified by the way of Buddhism. So last week at Summer Institute, which is a Unitarian Universalist church camp, I took a course called the Zen Experience, led by the Venerable Shi Ying Fa, who is the abbot of Cloudwater Zendo in Cleveland. And I'm quite sure I did not read the course description very carefully when I signed up for this, because I discovered within moments of entering the room that this was going to be a much more rigorous experience than I had bargained for. I thought about dropping out, but I had already asked him to guide an eating meditation at one of the Vesper services that I was leading, so I figured it wouldn't be really cool to drop out of his class. So I took a deep breath and figured I'd adjust my expectations for the week. We received very brief instructions the first day and then spent the rest of the week in meditation, which followed the same form each day. We entered the room in silence for seated meditation, and then with the sound, the only sounds were either chimes or wooden clappers would indicate that it was time to move to walking meditation and then to return to seated meditation, this time turning our chairs to face the wall lest we had been distracted by the feet of the people in front of us when we were facing the center of the room. And then the chime would signal again that it was time to chant the Heart Sutra, followed by listening to a brief Dharma talk while we maintained our meditative posture. And then the chime would signal us out in a formal exit. Despite my initial hesitation, I found this experience very valuable. His intent was to give us a glimpse of what it would be like to be in a Zen seminary, and he offered this quite faithfully, and I responded to the invitation. One of the most valuable experiences, lessons that I took from the experience was understanding yet again that I am not a Buddhist. At least not a Zen Buddhist. And this is important because I am drawn, you know, Unitarian Universalist draws on many sources, and I am drawn to Buddhism over and over again. So multiple times in my life, three now, I have sought out opportunities that turned out to be like this, immersing in Buddhism. And each time I do that, I learn again that I'm really not Buddhist. Which is an important thing to learn, because it helps me have a greater appreciation for the wisdom of the tradition, and at the same time that I understand why it's not mine, why it's not a perfect fit for me. And my insight this time into why I am Unitarian Universalist and not Buddhist came because of his teaching about joy. So the Heart Sutra that we chanted every day speaks of emptiness. Emptiness is nothing but form. Form is nothing but emptiness. All things are essentially empty. And you're probably acquainted with the part of the Buddhist teaching that says that clinging is the source of suffering. Buddhism offers great insight into the reality of impermanence. This is one of the teachings of Buddhism that I particularly find really helpful in my own spiritual journey. It resonates with me. All things are impermanent, and we experience suffering when we cling tightly, for nothing ultimately goes unchanged. And this includes our feelings, of course. And it's easy to argue and to see that feelings are impermanent. But chanting the Heart Sutra every day for a week, I realized that this teaching also means that feelings are emptiness. And this became clear to me when I heard Venerable Shi Ying Fan, one of his Dharma talks, explain that joy is an illusion. It was at that moment that I realized once again that I am indeed Unitarian Universalist, because the Buddhist path to enlightenment includes meditation practice in order to discover for ourselves that form is emptiness. The focus of the experience is gaining, for each practitioner, through meditation, to gain this insight for themselves, which will transform their lives. And it's a beautiful path for those who follow it. But if I had to pick just one path or source to guide my life, I have already found it. And if I were to look within our tradition for the teaching that resonates most with me, I would look to the transcendentalist teachings about joy, summarized well by the transcendentalist Henry David Thoreau in his work Walden. "I went to the woods," he said, "because I wanted to live deep and suck the marrow of life. If life proved to be mean, I wanted to get the whole and genuine meanness of it, or if it were sublime, to know it by experience. If I had to choose just one way, I would choose this way. I'd rather plumb the depths of life and all that it brings, including the experiences of joy and sorrow, and know them intimately. I speak of them together because I do believe that they are inseparably connected." That's what Khalil Gibran writes in his passage on joy and sorrow in the Prophet, which is what a reading that I shared with you a couple of weeks ago. He says, "When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find that it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. And when you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight." I came across a hymn this week that beautifully illuminates this relationship and powerfully plumbs the depths of joy and sorrow. The words of the hymn will be familiar to many of you, especially those of you who grew up Christian. "I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Kids learn it in Sunday school, even still." The music, though, to this hymn may surprise you. The music and the additional lyrics were composed by Latifah Phillips of a Christian band, CXVI. She wrote this song the night her father died. She sat down at the piano to be with her grief, and she found herself singing this familiar Sunday school hymn. And then, as though it were already written, she began playing this music. The hymn is an expression of her deep sorrow upon the death of her father and her joy in the end of his suffering, as well as the promise of redemption she finds in her own Christian faith. To me, the hymn is a musical revelation of the truth that joy and sorrow are bound, and that if we look deep enough, we may indeed be able to locate joy even in the most trying of times. Or if in sorrow, all we can do is remember that we once knew joy, perhaps that is enough to enable us to trust that joy will come again.
I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Down in my heart. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Down in my heart. And I'm so happy, so happy, so very happy. And I'm so happy, so happy, so very happy. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart. And I'm so happy, so happy, so very happy. And I'm so happy, so happy, so very happy. And I can't understand, and I can't pretend, that this will be all right in the end. So I'll try my best and lift up my chest to sing about this joy, joy, joy. And I'll be happy, so happy, so very happy. I'll act happy, so happy, so very happy. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart.
Thank you for learning that house so we could hear it sung live today. I told Colleen in the office this week that I wanted to just play the song on repeat, and that would be the service this morning, because I think it says so perfectly and so beautifully and so powerfully exactly what it is that I am trying to say. It's possible to find joy in trying times because, to quote another beloved hymn, joy and sorrow are woven fine. It's possible to know both joy and sorrow at the same time, and it isn't a betrayal of our sorrow to notice and honor our joy. Paul Martin is another author whose work I read this week. He is someone whose life has been painfully disabled by a chronic, progressive, incurable illness with which he's been living for many years. And at this point in his life, he's mostly bedridden, but he still writes. And joy is one of the things that he writes about. He encourages people to find joy in the little things in life. Family, friends, work, play, having a clean body, having a place to live, having food to eat. He encourages us to notice our joys and to consciously take advantage of the opportunities we have to experience joy. He believes that this is one of the pathways to connection beyond ourselves. And this is important, he says, because connection with what he calls the one beyond ourselves, is salvific. In his own life, he has found, as he writes, that great pain and difficulty, especially when it's permanent, can drive you over the edge, or nearly. Or, he says, it can drive you to identify less with your disconnected self and more completely with the one. Either you find a deeper basis for life once you lose life as you knew it, he continues, or you complete your destruction with your own anguish. Martin believes that practicing joy is one of the ways to go deeper into ourselves and deeper into our relationship with that which is larger than ourselves. So how do we do that? Many wise thinkers tell us that embracing joy is a choice, which isn't to say that those who do not choose joy are failing, but simply to say that it is a choice that we can make again and again, and no matter how long we have foregone the opportunity to make that choice, we can choose to begin again, even right now. In one of the sermons in the newsletter of the Unitarian Universalist online church called the Church of the Larger Fellowship, the newsletter is thematic, and this month's newsletter is about joy. And in one of those sermons, the Unitarian Universalist minister, Peggy Clark, says that joy is not in the circumstance, but in the response. The sun rises every day, like it or not. Being entranced by it is a choice. The first step to making this choice is to notice. To notice the sun rising or setting, to notice the love that surrounds us, to notice the grace of the osprey diving for fish on a beautiful summer day, to notice the glories of so many shades of green on a summer evening, to notice the beauty of music or the wonder of blueberries or the power of love or the miracle of life. The first step is to notice our opportunities for joy. The next step is to be open to the experience. And that's why I love the image of the poet watching the morning glories and praying to know their secret joy, to open and close without holding. All right, you may be thinking, but where is the joy when it isn't just our personal sorrow with which we must contend, but also the trials of a world which seem truly on the brink of disaster? War, environmental destruction, racism, poverty, and frightening presidential politics fill our days, our nudes days, that is. So where is the joy in times of violence and fear and hatred? I would say that our challenge is to notice joy, to find it, and then notice it and celebrate it. And this is important not only because it's good for our own souls, it is good for our own souls, and it's good self-care in trying times like this to practice joy. But noticing and celebrating joy isn't just good for us. It's good for the people around us, and it's one of the ways that we can affirm the beauty and goodness of life when everything around us seems to be falling apart. This is one of the ways that we can bless the world. I love that Colleen invited me to speak about this today, about finding joy in trying times. And I love that she shared a little bit of her own sources of joy with us. I know some of my colleagues are reluctant to offer this opportunity for members of the congregation to select a sermon topic at their annual service auction. There are conversations every year as ministers approach their service auctions with their congregation. Shall I do this or not? What if I am asked to speak on 9th century medieval something or other? And in 11 years here, I have not had one painful suggestion. Even better than the topics themselves, though, what I have loved about this practice is the conversation with the people who have been the winners of the opportunity to select a topic for a service. Every single one of those conversations has been a pleasure. So I'd like to leave you with something that Colleen raised in our conversation. She noted that she wanted me to talk about joy today and finding it in trying times, not only because it's important for us to find the source of our own joy, no matter what it is, but also because it is important to practice spreading joy. I couldn't agree more. And thus, I think I want to add another source to the list started by the Chalice Group participant. We can find joy in family, in nature, in learning, arts, community, divinity, and also in service. If you ever listen to Delilah, that pop radio talk show that is all about uplifting music, or read Dear Abby, you will notice that encouraging people to serve others is a popular antidote to what ails us. It's so widely prescribed because it is so deeply true. Serving others is a way to find joy by spreading joy. In this way, service renders at least a double portion of joy. Sometimes the joy of service reaches even further, quadrupling, or what is it when I'm not good with math? Exponentially, that's what I was trying to say. Though there's a math term for that, isn't there? Randy? Yes. Okay. I don't know what it is. But just think about this. On Facebook, there are these stories about like young people doing something beautifully to save animals, or someone who rescues someone else in a selfless kind of way, or raising money to clean up toxic waste dumps in some part of the world. These stories so often go viral, and the reason that they do is because someone's service spread joy to everybody who heard that story. Service sounds like work, but it is always more. The beloved literary light and the Nobel Prize-winning poet of India says it so well. So I'll leave you with his words once again today. Rabindranath Tagore. I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy. May we ever find it to be so. Amen. And blessed be. Marian Yeagler is one of the co-chairs of our capital campaign and also one of the newly appointed members of our transition team who will help guide the congregation through the interim process that will be coming soon. And Marian has a few words to invite the offering this morning.
Thank you, Melissa. One thing that gives me joy is supporting this community that is a refuge in our community. Recently, Kathy Kearns and Reverend Melissa and I met with a longtime member who has supported this church for decades in every way and can no longer attend, but he wanted an update on the Capitol campaign. And toward the end of that meeting, he used the words, "This church is a refuge." And what I'm asking you to do today when you're considering your financial support for this church over the course of the next years is to remember that we've heard so many testimonials in the last few months from people who walked in the door and found a refuge here. And this is one of the few places some of those people have been able to find a refuge. They're not accepted in the general community, but we don't judge them, we accept them. And that's what we're striving to do. So please take into consideration and give as generously as you can so that we can remain a refuge for many years to come. We have our 150th anniversary, and, you know, we'd like to be around for another 150 years. And one way to do that is to support this church financially as generously as you're able to. Will the ushers please come forward? So you'll continue to hear testimonials from people who've found a refuge here. And maybe you'll consider making one of those testimonials.
The great Christian teacher Henry Nouwen says that joy does not simply happen to us. We have to choose joy and keep choosing it every day. So go in peace and choose joy.